Hello, I'm Howard Kane, and this is Rewind. You probably know that already, of course. Most of you know how to use your phones or smart speaker or even tune in a radio. A radio, Grandad? What's that? What you might not be aware of is the sheer breadth of programmes, music and issues covered here on Manx Radio, and that's where this programme comes in. From crawlboard to dodgeball via Wetherspoons and Basking Sharks, it's all here. Yes, I know. I didn't realise either. So, May has been Mental Health Awareness Month, of course, highlighting an issue many of us even now find difficult to talk about, and looking at activities, support groups and charities which may be able to help. One such was a community sporting event launched by the charity I'll Listen. The inaugural Isle of Man Dodgeball Championship took place last week with the aim of promoting mental well-being through physical activity and social engagement. But just what is dodgeball? If you're anything like me, you didn't have much of an idea. On 1 to 3, Christy DeHaven asked Mikey Hazlitt from Active Souls, who hosted the event, to explain.
Every game will be done in about 12 minutes. So it's going to be high intensity, lots of fun, and that opportunity to launch a ball at an opponent as well.
Because that's essentially what it is, isn't it? For those that don't know, you're basically chucking what is a very soft ball, we should say,
yes,
at other members of the other team.
Yeah, they're just coated foam balls. So the opportunity for serious harm is really low. But yeah, the game of dodgeball is very straightforward. You have six players on one side of the cones, six players on the other. If you get hit, you're out. And eliminate the other team. It's a very straightforward concept.
So essentially, when everyone's down, that team's out.
Correct. Yeah. Once all six are out, they're out. Game over. And we're very much excited to see kind of a lot of people play it. It's very obviously very popular in the States, and we've been using it, promoting it for a long time here, as well as other things. So it's quite exciting to see what we can do.
Throwing things at other people, what's not to like? Though I think I'd like it even better if they replaced the soft foam balls with custard pies. It's all about promoting mental and physical health through fun, and Mikey, along with I'll Listen Stephen Downward and June Christian, told Manx Radio journalist Lewis Foster more.
We've been working with Active Souls for a while now, and we're delighted that the event's going to be powered by Flutter. And taking place in Mental Health Awareness Week, the theme this year is community. And we felt that this is a good sort of inclusive event to get the community together to have fun. What we often see at our listen is a lot of young people who need support with their mental health. And, you know, from being involved with Active Soul sessions with Mikey and his team, one of the things we found is it's fun. We have a laugh and a joke, and, you know, people can sort of take part to be competitive or just have some fun. Great for team building and stuff like that. We were also looking for an event that we could hold each year that can grow. There's lots of different events taking place on the island, and we felt this one would be a good space to fill.
Mikey, tell us about Active Souls then and the role that they're playing in all this.
Active Souls, our mission is very much around getting people involved in play. And we work across three pillars of getting people moving, making sure they have fun, making sure they're socialising and trying to build communities along the way. So it kind of sits nicely with what I'll Listen are trying to achieve as well. Our role on the day, our role in the involvement is bringing the sort of insider knowledge on dodgeball, on tournaments, on making sure that everybody leaves with a big fat smile on their faces at the end of the day. And it's been phenomenal working with Stee and Dewan to get this off the ground. And I'm quite excited to work alongside another team as well, because what it's allowed us to do is go that step further to make sure that it's not just a dodgeball event, but it's an event that I think everybody that's involved will remember.
From an Our Listen events perspective, we've got a very busy calendar, and this fits in really well. It's very accessible. You don't need to be big and buff. You don't need to be physically active day in, day out. You just want to dip your toe. It's a great throwback to school. It's dead nostalgic. So it sits well against our C-dips, our morning, mindful morning events that we have, which again, you know, they're very accessible. You've got Tough Mucker, which could be one way or the other. So dodgeball fits in really well. It's like Steve says, you get out, you do a bit of activity. Like Mikey said, everyone's going to come. They're going to have fun. They're going to feel great. And it may encourage people to do a bit more exercise, because there's all sorts of ways that we can improve our mental health. Our list, and we're very much a proactive organisation. So as much as we're there to help kids that have issues going on at school, we want to help the community as well. And it's a great profile raiser for the charity too.
All funds raised go towards educational programmes in primary and secondary schools to equip young people with tools and techniques to support them with their mental health. What a great idea. 1 to 3 on every weekday with Christy De Haven. I'll leave you to work out when it's broadcast. May also saw the 80th anniversary of VE Day, and in Reflections on Victory, a special programme to mark the day, we heard some wonderful recordings, old and new, the old ones made by Manx Radio's Roger Watterson, who in 1995 made a special edition of his Sunday Opinion programme to mark the 50th anniversary of VE Day. Some wonderful voices there and interviews. I'll let Roger himself introduce one or two.
Vivian Allen now resides in Castletown, but in 1945 she lived in London and joined in the celebrations at Buckingham Palace.
Oh yes, I remember VE Day. In fact, I'll never forget it. I was a teenager then. I was living in London with my parents and my younger brother in a flat overlooking Battersea Park. And from the balcony, we'd watched the glow in the sky from the London docks burning at the beginning of the 1940 Blitz. And my main reaction to VE Day was no more bombs, no more doodle bugs, no more V2s. I mean, one could hardly believe it when I'd grown up with it and got so used to it. Come the great day, my brother and I begged to be allowed to go up west, up to the West End. My mother wasn't very keen on the idea, but she instructed my brother to look after me, and she made us sandwiches, which we packed in our gas mask cases. We'd just thrown them in the dustbin ceremoniously. And those gas masks, at the beginning of the war, the first term of the war at my boarding school, we were made to do one lesson a day in our gas masks to get used to them. And the rubbery smell and the claustrophobic feel is with me still. And, well, I don't know whether you breathe in or out, and the rubber at the side on your cheeks sort of flapped. It was most peculiar. Anyway, off my brother and I went on the bus to Hyde Park Corner, and we got caught up in the crowds along Constitution Hill to the palace, and we found ourselves just beside the Victoria Memorial. Well, there's not much of me. I'm barely 5 foot tall, so of course I couldn't see very much. My brother was a bit taller, and he was looking around. And we were beside a group of American sailors, and one big brawny sailor caught me round the waist and swung me up onto his shoulder. Of course, from that vantage point, I could see everything, the whole of the crowd stretching back down the Mall and all shouting, "We want the king." And I could also remember my baby brother's upturned face, looking rather anxious should he have allowed his sister to be handled like this. And then the roar when we saw the French windows onto the balcony open, and out came the king and queen, followed by the princesses, with Princess Elizabeth in her ATS uniform, and Winston. And then the shouting changed to Winnie, and he was giving his famous V sign. And then went on to Trafalgar Square. Of course, that was packed. We climbed up on the plinth of Nelson's column, and we sat there and ate our sandwiches. And there was just sort of general shouting and cheering and frolicking in the fountains.
You're listening to Reflections on Victory as we commemorate the 80th anniversary of victory in Europe.
In 1945, Manxman Terry Blackburn was the assistant town clerk for Castletown.
My strongest recollection of VE Day is of two American jeeps tearing down through Malou Street. They were the crew of an American bomber, which on hearing that the war was at an end and had made their way to the Isle of Man and landed at Jervey. And they had been told that the best place to celebrate VE Day was in Castletown. And they came down through Malou Street in these open jeeps, were whooping and shouting and one thing and another, and they joined in with the general merriment on the Market Square. And there were hundreds of literally hundreds of people on the market square, and it was celebrated to the early hours of the morning. But at that time, Castletown was a very, very busy place. At Janet's Corner, there was, of course, a naval camp. And again, there was naval camps just opposite the present air terminal. At Scarlet, there was a radar station, and there were several hundreds of WAFs and assorted Air Force personnel. In the whole of the radar station, there were several giant masts to send out signals and to receive the signals. It was part of the military defence of the British Isles, and the remains of Hutments still exist round Scarlet, where units of soldiers protected the area. The period after the war was a period of rebuilding and largely resettlement. Janet's Corner, the Nissen huts which had been used by the naval personnel, were used temporarily for dwellings for not only returning soldiers and their wives, but there'd been no building done during the war, and there was a lack of housing. But when Elizabeth II came to the throne, it seemed like a new era, and everybody was very keen to set an example and to build not only a new Britain, but a new Isle of Man. And it was a very optimistic period. Whether all that optimism has been justified or not, I don't know. We'll have to leave that to the present younger generation.
It's amazing, isn't it, how it's the little things which stay with you in the face of massive events, like Vivian's vivid recollection of how the gas mask rubber felt against her face in lessons. These things often stay with you for life. Now, for those of you who have been around for a few years, you might remember that late spring, early summer, marked the return of the basking sharks to Manx waters, the gentle leviathans of the deep, who used to be such a common sight around the Manx coastline during summer months. Sadly, their numbers in recent years have declined quite dramatically. I haven't seen one in several years. But all is not lost, it seems, as several basking sharks have been spotted in Manx waters this year already. Manx Radio's Amy Griffiths headed out west to find out more.
I'm Jen Adams, the Outreach and Education Manager at Manx Whale and Dolphin Watch.
And we are here on Peel Prom. You can hear the waves in the background. It is a beautiful day, although a bit windy, colder than we were both expecting. But we've come down here because we are at the start of basking shark season. So what is the season for basking sharks here on the Isle of Man?
So basking sharks typically come around about middle of May and stay till the end of August. However, they have been nice and early this year. So the first sighting was actually on the 29th of April. So it's getting off to a really positive start. And we've also now had 5 sightings, and that's already half of what we had in the whole of last year put together.
Wow, so we only had 10 sightings last year. So why do you think there's been such a dip in how many we're seeing in Manx waters?
So over the years, we've seen fewer and fewer basking sharks. It's difficult to know exactly why. However, there have been lots of basking sharks in different areas of the UK. So they had loads of them. So I'm talking hundreds of sharks last year off the west coast of Ireland and also near the Moray Firth on the east of Scotland. So it seems that their distribution has been shifting in the last decade.
But hopefully this means that actually this coming season, if we've already seen the numbers that we have been seeing and quite early on, that actually we might be able to see quite a few of them this year.
I'm really hopeful. I mean, we're so excited that we've had 5 so far already. Most sightings have been in the south of the island. We've had them off Santon, also off the west of the Calf and Langness and Port Erin as well.
What are your main tips for going out shark spotting? What do we need to be looking out for?
Basking sharks have a big triangular-shaped dorsal fin located in the centre of the back, and you will see that fin just travelling slowly and steadily through the water. So unlike dolphins that roll up and down and up and down to breathe air, basking sharks won't.
And it's one of those things that from my experience, you are constantly looking at the waves, you're going, oh, is that a fin? Is that a fin? Is that a fin? When you finally see one, you go, oh yeah, I don't know how I mistook anything else for it, because they are very distinctive, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they are huge. Sometimes if you're lucky enough to see a shark really high up in the water surface, you'll see the tail as well. And because the dorsal fin is in the middle of the body, you can get a really good idea of the actual overall length of the shark. And they can be massive. They can grow to about 10 metres in length.
Which is just huge, isn't it? And they are magnificent things. And if you didn't know that they were friendly or didn't have the big teeth and things, they could be quite intimidating, and probably still are, even if you do manage to get up close to one on a boat or in a kayak or something like that.
Yeah, I think they can look very intimidating just due to the size and the fact that they often have their mouths open wide as well. But they're just doing that to filter their food, which is plankton. So they really are gentle giants. They wouldn't harm any people purposefully. They don't have any teeth in their mouth either. But it's always very important to give them their space, respect the distance, especially if you do happen to see them when you're out on a boat yourself.
I think Manx people really do take pride in our basking sharks, and they are really special to us. And why do you think that is?
I mean, they're such an iconic species, aren't they? And historically, the Isle of Man has always been a really great place to see basking sharks. So going back prior to 2010, we used to see hundreds of basking sharks around the Isle of Man. I've heard so many stories of people saying you could almost step across them to get back to shore from your fishing boat. So historically they were here, and I know they have dropped off over the last 15 years or so, but we're really hopeful that they will come back again.
Let's hope we see more of the gentle giants again. Though stepping across the basking sharks from your fishing boat to reach the shore sounds like something out of a James Bond movie. I've been lucky enough to have been out in a boat to see baskers in close quarters. They are amazing animals. They dwarf the boat we were in, and they can travel vast distances should they decide to do so. You can hear Amy's chat with Jen about the sharks in full via the Manx newscast on the Manx Radio website. May was also the birthday of the island's most famous and successful author and playwright, Hall Caine. And on Chaclair earlier this month, presenter Bob Carswell marked the event, the programme, as usual, being delivered in English and Manx.
As uns na pebron I go shen, hugge an irru was an enam shen moran bolva Thomas Hall Caine rugget, ach harau shen ach trud tachert, as vatain apparent an egad a fear uns lairful egan tre shen. The 14th of May marks the day of the birth in 1853 of Thomas Henry Hall Caine, who preferred to be known simply as Hall Caine. James Franklin, the online and educational resource officer for Culture Vanin, is also responsible for the website manxliterature.com, which he'd already set up before coming to work for Culture Vanin. And that website includes material by and about Hall Caine. James Franklin, what's the importance of Hall Caine and his work to the Isle of Man and to literature in general?
Hall Caine, I think, certainly is the Isle of Man's greatest novelist and also our greatest and most successful playwright. He was compared to figures like Balzac and Tolstoy in his own day. He was considered to be one of the most important figures in world literature, not just of his age, but for all time. That hasn't really been borne out as we are today, but still his books are certainly the best things in parts that you will ever read of the Isle of Man. They're so evocative, so exciting, so much drama and romance. And they are, in my opinion, the best novels of the Isle of Man, and everyone should read them. Mm. He was selling millions of copies of his books. His books were best-selling in Britain and in America, and they were translated into tens of languages and simultaneously published all over the world. This was a man who was mobbed not just on the streets of London, but on the streets of New York. His fame was that enormous. He made an awful lot of money, but I don't think people realise that he made most of his money not from his enormously successful books, but from the plays, which often spun off from these books. And these would sell out in London's West End and in New York and on their tours across America and across the UK and beyond. This was the literary figure of the time, and he was proudly and very front-footed about his Manxness. He was the Manx novelist.
How was that received in the island?
Well, anyone who's going to stand up and call themselves the Manx novelist is going to meet a reaction of sorts from the Manx people. He had a troubled relationship, or the Manx people had a troubled relationship with Hall Caine. He was a brilliant writer who wrote brilliantly and imaginatively of the Isle of Man. He lived here, he wrote his novels based upon the stories and the places he knew here, and quite clearly he loved this place very deeply. But it was very hard to accept him for the Manx people. They saw that this was someone getting above his station. This was someone who wrote coarse books of people who were of the Isle of Man doing things which morally people could not agree with. And he brought in, or his books brought in, floods of tourists wanting to see where his characters lived and did the things they did in the Isle of Man. And this was extremely embarrassing for a lot of Manx people, the idea that these characters might have relationships or might bear children out of wedlock was extremely embarrassing, and especially when you have coachloads of tourists turning up wanting to see where this person lived. Oh, scandalous.
It's difficult now to think of Hall Caine's works as being considered coarse or scandalous and attracting people to the Isle of Man just to see where he lived. But I do love the fact that even 100-plus years ago, the Manx crowd was alive and well and very annoyed at the thought of someone being successful and getting above their station. His life also goes to show the fickleness of fame. He only died in 1931, not that long ago. The whole island came to a halt by all accounts, such was his international fame, as you heard James mention. Yet ask many folk about Hall Caine today, chances are you'll get something of a blank look. There's never any shortage of music here on Manx Radio, but some excellent, lots of it good, some completely appalling. However, you'll always find a selection of some of the best island-based bands appearing on the multi-talented CDH's Live Lounge programme on a Saturday afternoon, and along with chatting with Christy, they'll often play live in the studio. Such was the case a week or two back with the wonderfully named Crawlboard featured. Christy asked Bram, Leo and Conrad from Crawlboard, given the choice, where in the world they'd really love to play. LA, perhaps you might think. New York, Glasgow. No.
Maybe Austria.
That's an interesting first choice. Why Austria?
I don't know. Just sounds cool.
Somewhere a bit different. Maybe like a European tour in a Crawlboard van.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. I should actually say, right, so I had a chat this morning with some of my pals and I mentioned that you all were going to be on the show, and one of my pals happens to be in the building trade. And he said, I know what Crawlboard is. It's a roofing material or something. Is that true?
The thing is with the name, we don't really know where it came from. And I think when you actually look up Crawlboard, well, it used to come up with the first thing was like a roofing thing something, or some building material, and now it comes up with us, thankfully.
Yay!
But, we've overtaken the building industry.
Yes. More popular than builders' equipment and a live gig in the upmarket coffee houses of Austria with people in smart suits enjoying a strong coffee and a strudel. I like their style. The music isn't half bad either.
This is Mustard. It's the title track from our EP that we released last year.
Yeah. So if you do listen to the show regularly, you will have heard us play Mustard, but this is a stripped back acoustic version by Crawlboard. Take it away, guys.
Head on the road. lost in translation. You're unsure which way is up. I don't know your situation, but I know that I should be left sure. And I can barely see when you are near.
So good. That was so good. Crawlboard playing Mustard.
Great stuff. Live. Catch them on the Isle of Man or maybe in Austria soon. You'll find details online, I'm sure. Live Lounge, 4 to 6pm every Saturday afternoon here on Manx Radio. Now, you might have noticed recently the Isle of Man now has a Wetherspoons pub. The massive chain, beloved by some, derided by others, opened its doors in the site of the former 1886 bar and restaurant and club earlier this month. Among those there on the first day of trading for the Wetherspoons Isle of Man, the Conister Arms, was superfan Peter Idden and his daughter Janet, who'd come over specially from Preston. Peter is on a quest to visit as many branches of the pub chain as he can. He's currently on number 384. Manx Radio's Chanel Suku dropped down to have a word, though Peter played down his superfan status somewhat.
We were going to come this afternoon and just have a meal tonight, but I'm so glad that we came this morning. We're here to witness them opening it. So, yeah, it's great.
So 382?
384 now.
384. And what's the number you're trying to hit?
Oh, 806.
You're somewhat of a super fan, or people have labelled you a super fan.
Well, I don't know where that's come from. No, there's people that on the website, Spoons Tracker, there's people done a lot more than I am. I like the old cinemas. Llandudno's one of my favourite ones. And there's quite a few that are old cinemas.
Right, now, Janet, how did the idea of coming to the Isle of Man for this opening come about?
Any excuse to come to the Isle of Man. We spend a lot of time here. We like the motorbike racing and anything that's going on, we come over. We came over when the new boat came in and had to have the first trip out on the new boat.
They take over some lovely old buildings. Years ago, it was the post office. I used to come here for stamps.
He didn't say if he preferred the pints it now sells to the post it used to deal in, though I notice on the picture on the Manx Radio website, Mr. Idden is drinking coffee. Probably just as well, as he's got another 416 pubs to go, as long as they don't open any more. Certainly has his work cut out. Finally, before we go, a delight from Chris Williams. Well, Mr. W is always a delight. Manx Radio's own Terry Wogan, a voice like smoked velvet and a delivery like a 21st century Charlie Chester. His little chats every morning with Breakfast Ben Hartley on the handover, always a joy, even when he can't get his tongue around Ben's budgie smugglers. Cheerio.
You said you left your shorts on the side.
Yes.
On the side of what?
On the banister.
Oh.
That's where it's all laid
That's
out.
That's very posh. Have you got banister rails?
We've got banisters, darling, yes.
Blimey. On DAB online, on smart devices and on FM radio from Douglas Isle of Man, Shaw Radio Vannin, this is Budgie Smugglers FM.